Darren, Kerry and Sky, East Coast Radio.
Professor Tulio de Oliveira, world-renowned virus hunter and virologist, right here at our very own CRISP Institute here at UKZN, joins us every Wednesday morning. Good morning, Prof. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, good morning, Darren. Good morning, Chalison.
So we finally got some of that good news. We heard about Moderna and the Pfizer vaccine preliminary results. Can South Africa afford it? And how do we keep it at these minus 70 and minus 20 degrees Celsius?
Okay, thank you, Darren. It was very interesting because last week, you remember, we talked to Professor Salim Abdulkarim, and then we kind of predicted that the vaccines with similar technology, that is the mRNA, Moderna, and the Pfizer, would give similar results. And it was fantastic that was confirmed this week. So just to highlight, both of them show to be more than 90% effective on preventing SARS-CoV-2 disease, COVID-ID. Yeah. And then the big question arises, like, how can we afford the vaccine? And if can we afford, can we distribute in large quantities? Yeah. And that's a very tricky question, because can we afford? At the moment, we are not so sure, because a lot of the rich countries, that is the US, Europe, and the UK, they have already booked the lion's share of the vaccine dose. What it means? It means that they already signed agreement that they would buy more than 80% of all the potential vaccine dose. Furthermore, and let's hope that doesn't happen, but the Trump administration is trying to pass a law that they call the America First Vaccine Act, that they would only export a vaccine if suit the U.S. demand first. And that's especially worry for the Moderna vaccines, the one that don't need refrigeration or not minus 80, because the U.S. government put $1 billion on that vaccine development. Yeah. So at the moment, we are a little bit in a limbo, because the Pfizer vaccine didn't participate what you call the warp speed development. Yeah, they didn't receive this massive amount of money. So we potentially...
Oh, no.
Prof?
This ultra cold freezers, yeah.
All right, we lost you for a second there, but we got you back, it seems. And then what would happen, or what would the effect be, if someone or many people refuse to be vaccinated?
Yes, that's another problem. Yeah, as you are quite aware, we have this anti-vaxxers movement. Yeah, which is quite worried, because some people may refuse to be vaccinated. Yeah? At the moment, our human rights allow people to refuse vaccination. Yeah. So, but I think that what will be key is to work with public engagement, show the benefit of vaccination, not only for them, but especially for the elderly members of the family. Yeah? So again, it's going to be a little tricky situation there. But what would one think that we will see, if it is a lot of the rich countries begin to have very high level of vaccine and they get out of the pandemic and go back to normal, I think that can help other countries like South Africa or more developing countries to see that it's worth it to trust the vaccine.
Prof, I'm not an anti-vaxxer, but I'm going to ask you this question. How can we be sure to trust the vaccine? Because a lot of people believe it won't be safe because it's been so rushed.
So that's an important question. Why we could trust the vaccine? It has been rushed, that is true, but it has been rushed with billions and billions and billions of dollars of support. And a lot of time development can be advanced if you throw enough money. For example, you can construct a building in a year, or you can construct the same building in a month if you bring like much bigger investments and workers. So in addition to that, we had like thousands of the best scientists in the world join the vaccine program. Never in our scientific history we had so many different scientists working to solve a problem. And together with a lot of resources, I think that's the reason why it's advancing so quick.
Well, we're going to continue our conversation with the good Professor Tulio de Oliveira. He's with us until 9 this morning. 10 to 9 with Darren, Kerry and Sky here on East Coast Radio. And we're continuing this Wednesday morning with the good Professor, Professor Tulio de Oliveira, virus hunter, virologist from our very own CRISP at UKZN, joins us every Wednesday morning to speak about some interesting developments in the field of COVID-19. And if you missed part one, that full podcast already up on the website, ecr.co.za. If not, that will be on straight after the show. And Professor, you called it. We were hoping to get some vaccine announcements by November, and here we have two of them, no less. But there is the other side of this coin, Professor. Sweden believed in this phenomenon called herd immunity without a vaccine. And how is that working out for them?
Oh, that's terrible, Darren. It didn't work at all. For them. So as you know, Sweden took a very different approach than most of the different countries of not doing a lockdown and just try to shield the old people. In the first wave that was in the spring there, they end up with like close to 8 times more death in the old people than the neighboring countries. And now in what is the second wave happening in Europe, they are again at least with 5 times more infection than the other Scandinavian countries. Now they are scrambling. This week they passed some rules of not more than 6 people meeting. They are considering closing schools, closing business, and going now in a lockdown. What's very difficult when you convince your whole population that your approach was the right one. So unfortunately it backfired badly on them. Of course that Sweden is still one of the most developed countries in the world, so they will try to see if they can come back in the game. But this week was really, I think, one of the last nails on this coffin of the herd immunity would protect it from second wave of infection.
And then Professor, what would fuel a second wave in South Africa?
What would fuel a second wave in South Africa would be very similar what has fueled a second wave in most of the other countries in the world. It is when infections start spreading, first in asymptomatic people, mostly like young people, that's people between 18 and 25 years old, that have very high social contact rates, and then start going up the different age. They start passing to the parents and to the teachers at university, and then you happen what is after that is what is called like university clusters. That happened in over 1,000 universities in the US, and most of the big universities in Europe. That's currently happening in South Africa in a few universities, and then after that start going to the general population. So it's just this process that is starting transmitting on asymptomatic people that's like unlikely to get tested and get disease, and then start going until you notice that your hospitals is getting full and people dying again, what is happening in the Eastern Cape. And this week you notice that the Western Cape put like big alerts, especially in Knysna and George, that's the two first districts that connect with the Eastern Cape by the N2.
Prof, just before you go, I have to ask this. Do we have the capacity as a country to live carefree during the holiday season? Hashtag get December, boss.
Yes, I think that basic what we have to do as a country, it is what a lot of our clinicians here at CRISP mentioned, is get back to the basics. And when I say the basics, not just the hand washing, sanitizers, use mask, but just getting the test strategy right. We have to prioritize key population for testing. We have to do clustered investigations very quick, so a number of infections don't become very large outbreaks. And then we have to support people with isolation and quarantine. And when we mean supporting both with potentially facilities, but also supporting people with financial resources, so if someone has to miss work, that they can still get paid. So this, in the same way as you have these three basics of washing your hands, wearing a mask and social distance, in the public health response, we also have the three basics, that it is good testing, clustered investigation, and strength contact tracing, and then supporting the isolation.
So it looks like, as far as other countries are concerned, South Africa has been doing a good job. We just need to keep doing a good job. And a lot of this is in our own hands. Thank you, Professor, for chatting to us. And we'll talk to you again next week, Wednesday. Darren, Carrie and Sky.